Hello, 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 my friends, and welcome back to another episode of This One's For You. I'm Ella Noble, and I'm super excited about today's episode because we have something a little different and very special in store for you. Today, I'm sitting down with my newly appointed part-time co-host, full-time best friend, Catherine Slater. Catherine and I will be teaming up every few episodes to have real, honest conversations about topics that matter to all of us. And today, we are tackling a big one. Therapy. And no, we aren't going to try to convince you that you need it or scare you out of it. Instead, we're sharing our own experiences. Things like the importance of self-awareness, emotional validation, and trustworthy communication in our relationships. We talk about how recognizing and reframing negative self-talk can make a huge difference, and why it's okay and often necessary to seek outside help. We also cover some of the brass tacks, like finding the right therapist, and discuss how that's a process in and of itself. We'll also touch on sports psychology and how it intersects with therapy and managing the unique challenges that we face as athletes. So, whether you're a therapy enthusiast, curious about seeking help, or just looking for some heartfelt conversation, this one's for you. Let's jump right into it. Catherine Slater, welcome back to the show. I am very excited for today's episode. And I know I say that every time, but it's because it's the truth. But I am extra excited today because I am joined by my new part-time co-host, which is different than a part-time model, of This One's For You, Catherine Slater. You may remember Catherine from the episode we did in January when we chatted about me coming out of retirement. And that episode did so well, and we had so much fun, at least speaking for myself, that I asked Catherine to make it official, so to speak. I will still be conducting my one-on-one interviews with other guests, but I will also be talking about different subjects with Catherine on an alternating basis. So, hi, Catherine. Welcome back to the show.
Hello, Ellen. Thank you for having me.
Catherine Slater, I'm going to start with the hard-hitting questions.
Okay.
Last time we talked, we learned a little bit about you. We know that you're Mabel's mom, that you work for BCI. So, like, we know your stats.
Okay.
But who are you? What are, like, maybe what's something that people wouldn't necessarily know about you just by looking you up on LinkedIn?
Wow, that is a hard-hitting question.
I love asking a question like that, but, like, don't ever ask me that or else I'll freeze.
I promise not to.
I am multifaceted, as all of us are. I am currently in, like, my third version of a career at, you know, Bat Conservation International, doing conservation communications. My career before that was in the design world, where I was a copywriter and a creative director. Before that, I did a master's degree in urban planning. You see where this is going. I've been around the block a couple of times.
I've been everywhere, man.
I care a lot about my career, and I have worked really hard to sort of build that part up. I have also, you know, worked a lot on the rest of my life, my friendships, my relationship. I'm married to someone that you know. And yes, I'm Mabel's mom. So, you know, there's a lot going on. I don't know how to answer, like, who I am. I think, a friend. I'm a wife. I'm a career woman. I like to be outside. And I'm just started riding my bike again, so I'm a cyclist.
Yes.
As well.
Oh my gosh.
Took
I'm
a few
so
years
grateful
off.
For that.
Yeah.
For that comeback.
Yeah. Big comeback.
But I think, like, reading between the lines of what you just said, you are someone who has, like you said, you've been everywhere. You've done so many things. And I think that's what made you feel so, like, I don't want to say qualified, because it's not like I was, like, looking for
I'm definitely not
these candidates, but yeah. It felt like you were this person that I was always reaching out to have conversations. And I was like, oh, our daily dog walk conversations feel so golden to me that I wish that other people could benefit from what we talked about.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I feel the same way about our dog walk conversations.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And that's, I think in my mind, that's how we got here. So that's why I wanted to invite you to be my co-host. Mm-hmm. But why did you agree to be part of this show? What entices you about being on a podcast.
Well, I love talking. I think I said that right away on the last time I was on here. I love talking to you. I think This One's For You is a great concept for a podcast. I know from experience, from my own experience, that having people say the things that are in your mind that you've never said out loud yourself can be really meaningful. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a therapist. I'm not qualified in any way to be giving anyone advice, but there are things that I've experienced that I can share. Mm-hmm. And, I think it is fun to do that, and it's rewarding to do that.
Right. I like that. I feel like that summarizes what I'm trying to do here really well. Is like, I'm not trying to give anyone advice. I'm mm-hmm. trying to speak about the things that I've been through that like may shine a light on what someone else is going through right now. And right. yeah, I think that we both experienced, like, whether on TV or music or listening to people talk in any facet, like when you hear them say that thing that you've always felt, it's like immediately, speaking for both of us, burst into tears kind of thing.
Sob.
And it feels so good to be seen.
Yes.
And so I hope that even if it's one person listening to this show each week that feels seen,
right.
That feels really nice because I need it to feel seen, and I still do. Well, I'm so glad you're here. And today we are going to talk about therapy.
Woo woo.
And I'm intentionally, it's a little vague right now to say that we're going to talk about therapy because it's like, well, what part?
Right. What kind?
What kind? Yeah. I know. And it's vague because I don't know where this conversation is going to go. I have some questions. I have some bullet points, but you are an unknown quantity. I don't know where you're going to take it. Yeah. So we kind of just touched on this, but like, why make an episode about therapy? And for me, my thought process was in creating this episode is that there is still so much, it's still very taboo to talk about mental health, mental illness, and treatment of any sort of mental stuff.
Yep.
And I'm not saying everyone who's in therapy is mentally ill, but I sure as hell am. And I have faced a lot of like misconceptions around my mental illness, the fact that I'm medicated, all of that. And so I thought that if we could have like a conversation about like two outwardly successful looking people that have really benefited from therapy, like I said, someone feeling seen, I hope that even if one person listened to this episode and was like, oh, that is a fresh take on something that I thought was going to be, how do I say this? Therapy is shown really weirdly on TV and in movies. And
leather it's usually couch, leather couch. Down, someone taking notes.
That person doesn't give a shit if you live or die.
Yeah.
And except in that weird Jason Segel show where he cares too much.
Yep.
There's no in between. And you usually get to the root of the problem just as they say, well, that's all the time we have today.
Yeah.
And in my experience with therapy, it's extremely different from that.
Yes.
So I wanted to create something that maybe butts up against the way that therapy is represented in popular culture.
Yes.
I don't know. How do you feel about talking about therapy?
Yeah. For me, it's easy to talk about therapy because for me, it's pretty easy to talk about most things. Not everything, but like there are different types of people. There are people that we all communicate in different ways. We all have different comfort levels with sharing things about our lives. I have, like, candidly, I've just never had a problem sharing with therapists about my life. That's not true for everyone.
Yeah.
So I can empathize. I can understand why some people feel really worried about doing that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've heard so many different things depending on like the generation that you grew up in. Like, our parents have a very different idea about therapy than the people that are my age. And I feel like the people that are your age are much, I don't know, feel much smarter about it.
Like their whole lives.
Right. I feel like people are much smarter about it now. They know a lot more about it. It doesn't feel like it is still stigmatized in some ways and in some circles, but it's not nearly what it used to be where it was, you know, literally like people called it a shrink. Mm-hmm. It was, you are clearly, something has gone terribly wrong in your life.
Yes.
And that's why you're having to do this. And my parents are embarrassed that my kid has to go to therapy, you know? And so I think the conversation is changing and that's great. And I think, you know, the more we can talk about it, the easier it will be to get more people to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think with this episode, I'm not like, oh my God, everyone should go to therapy and whatever. But like, I want, if there's someone who's listening to this, like we talked about with, you know, popular culture representation, that's like maybe on the fence.
Yeah.
That's maybe who this episode is for. It's like, mm-hmm. if you're on the fence about therapy, this one's for you.
Yeah.
Cause I'm not trying to take someone who's like super, like staunchly anti-therapy,
right.
and convince them. They're because like, if you don't want to go to therapy, you don't have to go.
Well, the other thing about not wanting to go to therapy is it won't really do you any good, most
yes.
likely.
Yes.
So yes. that's one of the keys is like, you can't make someone go to rehab. That's mm-hmm. not usually successful. You can't force somebody to go to therapy
yep.
because someone who's going, the only way that that can be a transformative experience is if you are telling the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
Yes.
You know, the more you hold back in therapy, the less successful it's going to be.
Yes. And I've had a lot of instances of that where, especially like with other therapists, besides the one that we'll get to her,
yeah.
but, the one that we're both seeing right now, but, yeah, I've like, maybe not like overtly lied, but like, it's so easy to
withhold. Yeah.
And with therapy, you get in what you get out or what
you get out, what you get in.
You get back what you put in.
Flip that, reverse it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Missy Elliott.
Yeah. So this one's for you if you're on the fence, I think is what we're saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think to start out, actually, just before we started recording, someone said, that's why I need therapy.
Mm.
And one of the things that I wanted to get out of the way early on in this episode is this mental shift from needing therapy to deserving therapy.
Ooh.
And how powerful that can be. The question I'm going to ask you next, if you want to answer, is how you found yourself going to therapy.
Mm.
Cause I have like a specific thing.
Yeah.
And it started with me believing that I needed therapy,
mm.
not that I wanted to go or that I deserved to untangle that crazy ball of yarn up top, not crazy like insanity, but like just a very, very, very tangled ball of yarn in my skull.
Yes.
I was like, I am broken
mm-hmm.
and I need to be changed. I need right. to change who I am.
This needs to be fixed.
That's why I sought out therapy. And yes, my dad had died a couple years prior. And I thought that maybe that was a thing that you do when you're grieving. But really, it boiled down to feeling like there was something broken inside me.
Yeah.
Therapy would fix it just by going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The first thing I want to say is I just finished reading this book that Al read first and actually was recommended by our therapist.
Okay.
So, but it's by Viktor Frankl, who survived concentration camps in World War II. And part, you know, this really interesting part of this book, did I say the name of it? Man's Search for Meaning.
Yes.
So the thing that keeps sticking in my head is he said, you do not have to be pathological, meaning you don't have to have some kind of mental illness or disease mm-hmm. that some doctor has told you you have in order to be experiencing, you know, discomfort or in order to gain something from therapy. Because to be a human being on planet Earth is to have all kinds of reasons that are not pathological that would send you to someone who might be able to help you work through things.
Yeah.
Like there's so much that goes on just being a human. And so that's one of the things I want to say is so many times I have felt like, oh my gosh, there's like you were just saying, something's really wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like this thing that's going on, I shouldn't be reacting this way yeah. or whatever. And to come back to that idea of, it's really complicated and scary and complex to be a human being, not knowing what like happens after you die. There's so many questions that we're trying to fill in the blanks for. It's a confusing thing. So just recognizing that right off the bat. And then to answer your question, how I found myself in therapy, definitely I went a couple times as a kid. I can remember, I don't remember why, but I was a very anxious little mm-hmm. being, very nervous, very worried about, you know, everything, which now I look back and I'm like, yeah, you should have been nervous. But as an adult, I started going to therapy like in earnest because I was in a long-term relationship that was very important to me. And honestly, I thought well, I need to figure out how to convince this person that the way they're acting is not exactly like the right way. And now that I think back about on it and, you know, in therapy, I've talked a lot about this, but, there's this idea that you want everybody in your life to act more like you, which is not, if you really play that out, we don't need a bunch of Catherine Slaters. We don't need a bunch of Ellen Nobles. Like one of you, one of me
is
more than anyone needs.
Yes. I'd say it's just right.
Right. And so I started going because I had this idea that like someone else needed to change.
Yes.
And then very quickly it became clear that maybe, but that's actually not up to me.
Right.
That's none of my business.
Yes.
And so, you know, I started to really like learn about all the things that I could focus on inside of myself. And that's another thing in our culture where we're always looking outside of ourselves to try to kind of solve our own problems. And, you know, it's a fool's errand because it's not out there. The thing like this, the solves for your issues are not out there. They're usually, you know, buried in the layers of your own history, your growing up, your parents, your wounds, the relationships you've been in. It's all in there. And it's hard to look in there, which is why a lot of people don't.
Yeah. It's dark and scary.
It's a
cave of, and God knows what's in there.
Exactly.
Hopefully bats, but could be other stuff. Something that we talked about kind of a while ago is like, sometimes it's these experiences that happened just once. This like this glimmer, like it was one comment that you'll hold on to forever and that you realize that like you don't even know like why it's still stuck with you or like, you know, you're able to kind of let it go, but it's really, really, really held a lot more weight than it's worth, I guess, where it's like it's one comment about like me in third grade, like, oh my God, Ellen, you have breasts. And I'm 28 years old and I'm still thinking about that. So I'm 20 years and I'm like, okay, yeah, I have breasts. I'm a biological woman. Like I've been a woman my whole life. So it's like you have these things that are like really dark and creepy in the shadows. What if the monsters turned out to be just trees when you actually turn the light on and you realize that like this comment that like wrecked you that you've been carrying around is actually not all that scary.
Well, and what can it teach you? And that sounds like so simplistic, but all of those, I have those same comments. We've talked about them. Mm-hmm. You know, my grandmother made fun of my butt when I came out of the dressing room. Are these all body related? Possibly. But I came out of the dressing room as a kid in like overalls and I was so excited about them. And she made a comment about my body. And boy, did that stick with me.
Right.
And, you know, when I think about it now, I'm like, okay, what's in there that I still haven't, that's still hurting me?
Yes.
What's in there that I haven't discovered yet?
Yes.
What do I need to shine some light on?
Yeah. What do I get to shine some light on too? Because like, how freeing is it to be like, okay, I shine the light on this and I actually am deciding that I don't care about it anymore. I'm still upset about the boobs comment, but
I'll probably never recover from a lot of the things my grandmother said, but you know, as an adult, what I try to do is like look back with compassion, not only for my grandmother, who I learned later had her own body issues, but for that little kid who like, you know, when you're that young, I mean, it doesn't matter how old you are, you know, comments about your body are hard, but like, pouring love onto the younger versions of ourselves is another thing that you can do and experience in therapy. I think there are probably whole styles of therapy that focus on that. Being able to go back and say like, oh, I'm sorry that happened to you. That was really hard.
Yeah. And I think the ability to not even necessarily have like self-love, but like self-like or self-tolerance for myself is something that probably 8 years ago, I would not have thought was possible, but has felt a little bit more achievable every day because of the work that I've done in therapy. Yeah. So zooming out a little bit.
Yeah.
We go to the same therapist.
We do.
Now. And that's no accident because I got her contact information from you.
Yep. And I got her contact information from one of my best friends. Yep.
who's been working with her for
years and years.
But prior to working with her, I'm going to name her Melissa because, okay. Well, it made it sound like I made up that name. I'm going to name her, Melissa.
Because that's her name. Yeah.
But prior to working with her, I actually, let's just say I kissed a lot of frogs.
Same.
And I wanted to talk about that because that's like, I think maybe one of the most common reasons that people are super anti-therapy are actually people who gave it a shot.
Had a bad experience
and then never wanted to go to therapy again.
Yeah, that's so, a lot of people.
One, just like you dated a boyfriend that was kind of a shithead. Like, yeah. You got to get back on the horse. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk about that just a little bit because, I had like one therapist that really tried to push me like way faster than I was ready to go. Like I was, you know, trying to work out this stuff and he was like, all right, we just got to face it head on. And I'm like, that's like really scary. And it made the experience really negative for me. And so it wasn't until I started working with Melissa that I felt like the actual benefits of therapy. So I guess like I wanted to talk about that because I think I'm maybe talking in circles a little bit.
No, you're not. I can jump in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely have kissed a lot of therapy frogs and, it is like anything else. It's like jobs. It's like friendships. It's like relationships. You can try once, fail, and then never fall in love again or whatever, but that's not the like richness of life we're looking for, you know? And so just like anything, there are ranges of skill levels in terms of therapists and there are different like personalities.
Yep.
And so a therapist, I mean, it's the reason Melissa, you know, a lot of the people in this house see her and a lot of my other friends see her is because she's incredibly skilled and can read a room really well. So had she faced your discomfort in that moment where it was like, we got to push through. Mm-hmm. She would have backed off and like realized that she was not going down a path that was going to be working for you.
Yes.
And so, yeah, my husband and I saw a couples therapist many, many, many years ago who like was fine for me, but was not fine for him. Mm-hmm. And she was pushing and being like, just, it was clear from second one, it was going to be a total disaster. And it was. And you know, so that was like, that put a bad taste in our mouth in terms of couples therapy for a long time. Doctors, therapists, dentists, anyone you work with for anything.
It's a personal relationship.
It's a personal relationship and you deserve somebody who you can work with, feel comfortable with, and who understands what you need in those moments.
Yes.
And that's not everyone.
No.
And sometimes it takes a while.
Yeah. So I guess the point of that particular chapter is like, just because you personally know a therapist that like goes to happy hour with you sometimes who's kind of a jerk, or you know a couples counselor who's getting a divorce and it's kind of messy, does not mean that all therapists suck.
Correct.
And you may wonder, oh my God, Ellen, where did those examples come from? Well,
real life
and the people I know who are super opposed to therapy being like, well, I know therapists and they suck. And
right. Like, or you're related to one that you have a difficult relationship with.
Totally. Oh my God.
Yeah. Like there are so many reasons why, you know, or they've recommended something to you that like you are not ready to hear.
Yeah.
Something that's cool about the therapist we see is that she's constantly checking in on, how did that feel that I just said that?
Yes.
How, you know, she's asking those questions. So even if you're uncomfortable being like, ooh, that really, I didn't like the way you said that. Mm-hmm. She's making a lot of room for that.
Yes.
And you know, you're not going to like piss her off or hurt her feelings.
Right.
She's very clear about that.
Yes. Yeah. And she'll ask, she's like, are you afraid that you hurt my feelings by saying that? And so I don't want this to sound like we're just saying Melissa's praise the whole time.
Yeah.
But the reason I'm sharing these anecdotes are hopefully because like I wish that there had been someone who I could have talked to about like how uncomfortable I was mm-hmm. with the therapist I had prior to working with Melissa, where they could have told me like, oh my God, like that's not appropriate, or like this situation should have been handled differently. Mm-hmm. So like one example I want to share, because I think that this is like so important, is that I was having like financial problems when I was seeing this other therapist. And I also had like phone issues, like when my phone never worked, and he wouldn't let me in his office until I could show him on my phone screen that payment had been delivered.
That's awful.
It was so humiliating.
Yeah.
And I'd basically be like on the verge of tears before I entered his office.
Yeah.
Everything about him was just like really uncomfortable. And I felt like he was going to try to hug me leaving his office. We've talked about that. Mm-hmm. Lots of discomfort. So not really building like a safe therapeutic relationship.
Right.
Whereas Melissa always tells me how you are in therapy is how you are in real life. And I have this story of this particularly stressful Christmas, I think, where Melissa called me out of the blue and she was like, hey, are you okay? And I was like, yeah.
You're like, I don't know. Am I?
I'm like, I'm fine. Why? Like, just, I don't know why. Yeah. Am I? She's like, this is when she was still using paper checks. Mm-hmm. She's like, I just got an empty envelope from you.
I love that.
She's like, it was sealed. Yeah. There's no check inside. And I was like, oh shit. Like I have been really stressed. Like my mind has been elsewhere.
Yeah.
Like just no matter where I am, it's somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, I see that. Like this clearly indicates something to me that like you're not being your usual self, because typically my payment is on time. The check's always cash. Like mm-hmm. there wasn't even a check in the envelope. Like that is not like me. And so rather than punishing me or humiliating me for mailing an empty check, that turned into our session. Like,
right.
Well,
let's talk about
what led to you. And so, you know, this is something Aiden gave me permission to share this. Cause we were talking before we sat down to record this about how he had a really hard time showing up for therapy in the beginning. And he was like missing sessions, or she would call him because he didn't call mm-hmm. in on time. And they had to like create a whole process for him to be there.
Yeah.
And he's like, I had a very, very, very hard time showing up to therapy.
Yeah.
And yes, for some people, maybe it's because you're just like, you're elsewhere or whatever. But I asked him, I was like, well, why were you having a hard time showing up for therapy? He's like, I couldn't show up for myself. I was not showing up for myself in any aspect of my life. And I definitely wasn't showing up for therapy. And so Melissa saw that. And rather than being like, if you miss another session, like,
I hate you,
blah, 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 which might sound dramatic, but like, these are the things that I was experiencing with previous therapists. So it's mm-hmm. not unfounded. She was like, okay, well, how can we create a structure to get you to show up on time? And he said that once he started showing up in therapy, mm-hmm. showing up for himself in other places became so much easier.
Right. I have also had that, like before, even with Melissa at the beginning, I had this pattern of, and it wasn't just in therapy, this was a pattern, this was something happening outside too. but I same thing, I would show up either like late, or I wouldn't call in and I'd pretend like I forgot, or, and then she'd call me and I wouldn't answer. Mm-hmm. I was kind of like, I'd get to this point in therapy where I was starting to feel like a little uncomfortable mm-hmm. and the day of the session, I would be like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
I don't want to do this.
Right.
And then she, same, like if you have a good therapist, they will come to you and say, what is going on that you can't show up on time?
Yes.
This is not about your therapist being mad at you. It's about them. They're trying to help you. They're trying to help you.
Yeah.
And they can't help you if you don't show up.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Melissa has told me that even if I didn't call in, that is still saying something. Mm-hmm. Or if I called it and I didn't speak to her, that's saying something too. And I think that that's like the mark of a good therapist is like call, don't call, flake, cancel, all of it. You're still telling them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I need to keep reiterating, like I'm sharing these stories because like there are good therapists and there are bad therapists. Like with any job, people can be good at their job and they can be bad at their job, but mm-hmm. like someone who is good at their job in therapy, should be able to extrapolate a lot, even if you don't even show up to your session.
Right. And also there might be somebody who has a therapist that they recommended to you because they love them.
Yeah.
And it's not the right fit for you.
Yeah.
And that makes sense too.
And it can be like a starting point. And yeah. I know Melissa has had sessions with multiple people that I know. And she's like, I don't think that this is the right fit, but I have an extensive network of people mm-hmm. who I think that you could reach out to this person and it would be right. a better fit. So it's like you kiss a lot of frogs mm-hmm. and then sometimes you kiss a prince, but it's not the right prince.
Right. And then the other side of it is there are so many kinds of therapy.
Yes.
Like talk therapy, which is what I'm currently and you're currently engaged in, mm-hmm. is only one kind.
Yes.
There are so many,
yeah.
so many kinds. And I've done lots of different styles of therapy, one of which is called emotional freedom technique. It's the tapping.
Oh, yeah.
And tapping is cool because if you're the kind of person who has things that you know you want to work through, but you're not comfortable dredging things back up yeah. or it's some kind of trauma that you don't want to relive
yes.
in therapy, tapping is something that you don't have to talk at all mm-hmm. and you can still have big releases of emotions. Mm-hmm. So that's cool too. I wanted to say that it's not just talk therapy. There's a lot of other ways.
Yeah, I love that. I've only been in like talk therapy. I guess I was in, is it CBT?
Yeah.
Which I think is very
cognitive behavioral therapy. Yeah.
It feels very similar. I don't mm-hmm. know if there are like small differences, but yeah, there are a lot of different types of therapy. And I love the modalities that don't require dredging things up, especially mm-hmm. if there is something like particularly traumatic that like you may not need to, you probably shouldn't have to relive it.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that. And yeah, I guess in particular, we're talking about talk therapy, but like you deserve whatever sort of process is right for you.
Yeah, whatever works.
Have we already talked about why we believe in therapy?
I don't think so.
Did I kind of bury the lead there? Because I feel like that might have been a good place to start, but
there are lots of places to start.
There's no wrong place to start.
Okay. I personally believe in therapy because it has worked for me.
Yeah. I wrote, the proof is in the pudding for me.
The proof is in the pudding. And many of my loved ones. Yeah, I think it's something that all of your friends can tell you how great therapy is. Mm-hmm. If you have not experienced a shift in your own life that happened partially because of therapy, it would be hard to say, oh yeah, it's just something you have to experience, right. I think.
Yeah. I have like a limited belief system
mm-hmm.
and not in the way that we talk about people who are like, you know, like really like who haven't been exposed to much or whatever. I just like, I thought that in these ways of like you think that something can only go one way. You're like, okay.
And,
like,
and is that usually wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it's like, Melissa's like, no, like you have, like you are in the driver's seat. Like you can make these decisions. Like you can go back on a choice that you made.
Mm-hmm.
And like one of the things that I personally believe has changed my life is this understanding that there is no right choice. Mm-hmm. You make a choice and you make it right.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going through it like 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess we all were at that time, but I was going through it unrelated to COVID. And Melissa was like, you do not have to continue making the choice that you're making.
Mm-hmm.
You can do things differently.
Yeah.
Same thing like around my retirement was mm-hmm. very, very, very complicated for me.
Yeah.
And she's like, you are allowed to go down this path that like you didn't even know existed. And so like, she's given me this additional perspective that I think like we, even hyper rational people, even people who are incredibly connected with their own selves can still benefit from expanding
uh-huh.
their point of view.
Yes. I feel very connected to mm-hmm. myself.
Yes.
I am a very like emotionally intelligent person.
HSPs.
Uh-huh. And I am constantly yeah. learning and relearning.
Yes.
That there are a zillion other options.
It's why therapists also have therapists.
Correct. Exactly. You hope they do.
A lot of them
yeah.
do.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Doctors have doctors.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the thing that's interesting about therapy is it's, I think one of the other like misconceptions is that you go in and the therapist is just going to tell you all the things you've already figured out. Not to be dramatic, but you know, I've heard that. That's probably like the number one thing
what
I hear is like,
tell me that I don't already know.
I already know. Yeah. I already know what's wrong with me. And it's like, what do you think you know? You know part of it.
Yeah.
You are connected to part of it. But there are, like I said, we are complex beings with like all of these layers. We grew up in a particular way that was probably different than our partner, our boyfriend or girlfriend, our friend. Like, there's a lot in there to discover mm-hmm. in all of us.
Yes.
That's not just me. That's not just you. That's, we all have a ton to discover if we're, you know, interested in doing that and willing to do that.
We get so invested in our interpersonal relationships, especially romantic ones, mm-hmm. that I think it can be hard to see the forest through the trees mm-hmm. where it's, I mean, I feel like I talk about this all the time, but it's like, how can I communicate more effectively? Yes. How can I zoom out from focusing, like we've talked about, on Aiden or whoever it is? And it's like, it's going back, let's talk about you.
Uh-huh.
Even when you're like, no, like this is about them. It's like, but it can still be about you. And you can still be better at communicating. You can look at, why is this impacting you so much? Because that's something like it, like this comment made me feel particularly upset, even though it wasn't intended that way. And it's like, well, what thing happened 15 years ago that made that one feel especially icky?
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that the comment that I heard in therapy that changed my whole life and perspective was when, like I said, the reason I found myself in therapy as an adult was like, oh, there's something going on with this person that like, I need to help them fix, figure out,
right.
Help me help them. And what she said to me was like, I think we should focus on you.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, me? Yeah. I do yoga.
Yeah.
I meditate. Mm-hmm. I eat healthy food. How can I possibly have anything more to do? Aren't I done?
Yeah.
No. So like there is always, I have no control over your behavior. I have no control over my husband's behavior. I have no control over my mom. I don't have any control over any of those people. I can only continue to work on being the best version of myself. And the like dorky truth of that is usually when you are working hard on being the best person that you can be, you start to see your relationships improve. And part of that is there's less to hook into. Like if I'm working on this and I'm working on all my own stuff, it's harder to trigger me. It just gets harder mm-hmm. because I, you know, you learn more and you are less, you're less likely to kind of lose the plot when someone says something to you.
Yes.
You're more compassionate about like, oh, this person was raised in a different way. They have a different background than I do. They have their own wounds that they're working through. And so do I. And then you try to like combine human beings and there's a lot that gets tangled.
Yeah. That's so tricky. It's like, I'm combining my sticky points with your sticky points. And we're just hopefully not going to have a lot of
sticking together.
Sticking together. Like you said, the more you're focused on yourself, the less you kind of focus on the things that you wish other people would do differently. Mm-hmm. And it's part of it is kind of like the, I don't want to say like the point of therapy. I'm not a therapist, but like one of the points of therapy to me in my understanding is that when you talk about something, you lessen the severity of it. And that is like proven. Like I don't have any scientific literature that I'm citing here, but like I've proven it to myself. That person's angry.
That person's upset.
It's
the idea of like what is left in the dark is left to kind of fester there.
Yes.
The more you can, and I feel like I need to do some citations for my friend Kylie, who taught me so much of this before I got into therapy. Before I learned anything, you know, anything about any of this, but like the more you can bring things to the surface and shine light on them, the less power they have over you.
Yes.
And so, Yeah, it's like you don't want to dredge the things up, but once you do that and talk about them, and Melissa is always saying like, talk more, talk more, talk more. It is, you're not getting anywhere talking less.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's about shining light on things, especially the things that you really don't want to.
Yeah. And so I have an example, and it's not always this easy. It's not always instantaneous. Sometimes it takes a long time. But recently I was just like, I'm super in my own head. Like, I'm not telling you that, I'm telling the listeners that, yeah. But like, I am so in my own head, and I can talk myself into and out of pretty much anything, mm-hmm. if given yeah. enough time,
if and given a few minutes,
if given a yeah. few minutes of silence, I'm like, all right, it's not great. Yeah. And I started to get really anxious recently because I wasn't feeling like as physically like drawn to Aiden. Like I didn't want to be like close. Like, and usually like I want to be like getting a hug from him feels like very like healing to me. And I wasn't feeling that for a couple days, and he noticed and he's like, are you doing okay? Like you kind of feel different. Like mm-hmm. you're being kind of like guarded.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to talk about it. And he's like, come on, like you can't hurt my feelings. Like, tell me what you're feeling. And I was like, I'm just feeling kind of like distant from you. And he was like, okay, like, that's fine. Take mm-hmm. your time. Like, you know, whatever. It's not the end of the world. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't freak out and cry or whatever.
Yeah.
And then literally as soon as I said that, I was like, oh, I feel so much better. I just like need to hug you. Like,
yeah.
Like it literally just saying it made me not feel that way.
Yeah.
Anymore. And like I said, it's not always instantaneous. It's not thanks, I'm cured, but like really sometimes just saying it out loud.
I've had a lot of conversations with people in my family, people outside of my family, where, yeah, there's a thing they have not shared with anyone. There's a thing they feel really embarrassed about or really sad about. And yeah, I mean, anecdotally, I'm sure there's science.
Yep.
You don't know it. But there is.
This isn't about the science.
It's not about the science, but anecdotally, that is how you heal things.
Yes.
Sharing them with people, telling someone. If it's not a therapist, like, you know, it helps to tell your friends and it helps to tell people in your life. But I will say, like, that's another one of the like
tropes.
Things people will say is like, yeah. Well, I tell my friends everything.
Oh my God.
I share everything with my friends.
I'm so triggered right now.
I am triggered because I was that person for a really long time where that's what I did. My tool was say every single thing going on in my life to yep. one of my friends
yep.
and they'll sit there and listen.
Yep.
And then I'll be like, oh, I feel so much better. I have mm-hmm. emotionally dumped the contents of my body onto this person who is not being paid, who is not qualified.
Who has, like, none of the tools to, like, siphon it off. The
right.
Way that, like, the
they now hate everyone you've just talked about. Like, it's too much. And even if your best friend was a therapist, they're not qualified to be yours.
Yep.
Even if your boyfriend, husband, mother is a therapist, they shouldn't be yours.
Yep.
So, like, therapy is a way to pay somebody who is qualified mm-hmm. and has tools to help you. They can be the person that you know, put all of that stuff onto.
It's also like very special and unique to have someone who is like specifically focused on you.
Yeah.
It feels really nice because I have this a lot and I can't blame anyone for this. I'm not like upset about it, but you're like, oh, I need to talk about something. And then it's like, you bring something up and it's like, oh my God, true. Like that happened to me. Digress, digress, digress.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's how normal conversations work.
100%. Yeah.
But not that therapeutic. Thankfully, Melissa isn't like, oh my God, I know I had such a shitty week too. Like that would be horrible. Like it is so nice to be like, okay, for this next hour, we're not talking about anything that doesn't have to do with me. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, I'm paying her for it. Like I have no qualms about that. But yeah, like your friends can't, like you said, they know everyone you're talking about.
Yep. yeah. Right. And I'm sure we've probably all had that thing happen to us where, yeah, you share a whole lot about somebody that is a mutual acquaintance. And then,
they're dead to me. So
yes. And like that, you know, so anyway, I think I'm digressing, but
exactly.
We're all digressing.
Do you see how naturally we digress if,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think so, like, something else that came up while we were talking about that is, paying someone to talk to them. Yeah. And that is super challenging. And that is like, I think probably, I would say like one of the most, in addition to, you know, including, but not limited to, one of the most, legitimate reasons not to go to therapies, because it is quite expensive. Mm-hmm. But I live, as you have seen, very lean. Mm-hmm. I don't buy things. I balk at the price of so many things. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to tailor my own pants, because I don't want to pay someone $25 to hem them. Mm-hmm. I haven't hemmed them yet, but like I'm prioritizing other things.
Yes.
Because like even at like my leanest, I have continued to pay for therapy because it's so high value for me, but that is after all of my like baseline needs are being met. So yes. I'm not saying like can't pay your bills, can't feed yourself, like no gas in your car, pay for therapy. But it, I mean, if that's how you want to prioritize it, that's fine. But I'm talking about like all of my baselines have been met. This is how I'm choosing to spend like the very finite amount of money that I have left.
Yeah.
Left over each month.
Yeah.
But there are also more affordable ways to go to therapy than, mm-hmm.
Than the way we do
than the way we do it.
Yeah.
Including BetterHelp and Cerebral.
Yeah. Lemonade. I think there are now like a lot of online tools where you can find, whether, you know, I haven't done that. But I have heard a lot of people who have, and I think it's at least something to try.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is my therapist doesn't take insurance. Some of them don't, but a lot of therapists do. So, you know, if you have insurance, then that can be something that can be paid through insurance. And then, yeah, but like the reality is I think we have to be cognizant that some people don't have the money for it.
Right.
And that's a reality.
Yeah. And like I was talking about early on with some of my like less positive therapeutic experiences. Mm-hmm. There was a time when I was really struggling to pay for therapy. And like, I totally get it. I don't want to be tone deaf and be like, everyone should be in therapy, because that's not realistic. But to borrow a phrase, if you have the means, I would highly recommend it.
Correct. Yeah.
So we've talked about individual therapy and we've kind of tickled this subject, but what about couples therapy?
Love it. Recommend it. Big fan.
Is every couple that's in couples therapy like on the brink of divorce? Are they there because they hate each other?
Yes. No, I mean, this is the same. So just going back really quickly to individual therapy, you don't have to be on the brink of like losing your marbles or your mind or whatever to go to therapy. Like sometimes, often I would say people start going to therapy because something major is happening in their life or they need help or support with something. But then most of the time, like if you're staying in therapy, it's not because every day of your life you've got something really, you know, big going on. So you can think of it as like, it's there for a bunch of different reasons. One, when something big is happening, you've got that person. You know, I have been able to text my therapist when something really hard is happening, or I'm able to call them more often.
Yeah.
But also there is maintenance.
Yes.
There's like, it's your mental health checkup. Every 2 weeks I go, whether I have a topic or not, it's on the calendar. I have never had a problem filling the hour. even when I'm calling in and feeling like, oh gosh, I don't know what I'm going to talk about. This is, instantly there's something.
Yep.
So it's a maintenance thing. And what you realize is that then when those big things happen, you have a relationship with someone. Mm-hmm. You don't have to start from zero and explain everything that got you to this problem. You can jump in and say like, oh, you know, all these things about me and this thing just happened.
Yes.
And it's the same thing with couples therapy.
Yeah.
Like you do not have to be fighting or on the brink of divorce, although probably when people start couples therapy again, it's likely something has happened that mm-hmm. they're needing support for. But having that checkup on the calendar mm-hmm. with the person that you are in a relationship with can be really helpful. First of all, it makes space mm-hmm. so that you, maybe you're the one in the relationship who's always bringing stuff up. It makes space so that yeah. like, you don't have to say like, should we have a couples session? It's there and yeah. you're going to have it. And you know, you can talk about the things you need to talk about. And it also gives you like, theoretically, the person who is your couples therapist is a neutral party
yes.
who is there for the benefit of your relationship. So yeah. their job is to keep your relationship, help to keep your relationship healthy. Mm-hmm. And so they are able to speak on behalf of you and on behalf of your partner. Mm-hmm. And it gives you just a place where you can be vulnerable together and feel like there's still someone there who's really skilled.
And they keep you on track.
Yes.
Like, rather than everything just like devolving. What's the word
yes.
I'm looking for? Like just melting into
yeah.
bullshittery.
Bullshittery. I'm personally like a fight, flight, or freeze kind of person.
Uh-huh.
And so sometimes when hard topics are raised or if I feel like someone's angry yeah. or whatever, I can really like quickly like shut super down. Mm-hmm. And a skilled therapist can really help keep you in the conversation and say like, you know, you're clearly freezing, like
yeah.
talk through what's going on in your
yes.
mind.
Yes.
And another thing we haven't talked about, but this is a helpful tool sometimes, is like starting to think about the story I'm telling myself.
That's
the story
one.
I'm telling myself is that he's really mad at me. Yeah. This is the end of our relationship.
Yes.
It's all devolving.
Is that even a word?
I don't know. We'll have to look it up, everybody. But like, when you get into the habit of being like, the story that's a story. No one
yes.
has said that.
Right.
The story I'm telling myself. So like, anyway.
And it can feel so real. You're like, the story yeah. I'm telling myself, like, is the story that's the truth.
Is a true
and then,
story.
And then you yeah. bring it up, you shine the light on it, and suddenly it's not as severe as the
right.
story you've been telling yourself for a really long time.
Well, and it also gives your partner the opportunity to be like,
to
oh crush, my gosh, that's
set the record
straight. That's the story you're telling
yeah.
yourself?
You're like, that's not the case
that's
at
all.
That's
not what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
You know? So...
I mean, that literally happened in preparation for this episode. I'm like running things by Aiden and I'm like, you're being really quiet. And I didn't say the story I'm telling myself, but I implied like, I think that you think that this is the worst episode that's ever existed. He's like, I'm thinking, I'm literally trying to like process what you're telling me. I'm listening. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I really like with couples therapy, and going back to like what you said about like the fight, flight, freeze, like if you're
yeah.
like freezing or honestly, if you're experiencing any of those, you can be mad, you can lash out, you can get super angry or upset or whatever. And there's a neutral third party rather than you two just going at it back and forth, or like the two people in this scenario,
yep.
Where they're like, the therapist can say, okay, so what I'm hearing actually is this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, let's bring it back to like the productive part of this conversation. And it really keeps you on track. And it's like the most really efficient. I don't want to say efficient because I don't want it to sound like it's like this
right.
utilitarian, like, come
yeah.
on, let's go. But it really does. It keeps you from.
It can digressing. Forward conversations
yeah.
a lot quicker.
And like way deeper than you would get
yeah.
if someone said one hurtful thing and then you're crying.
Mm-hmm.
And then that can just be the end of the conversation.
Right.
But if you have someone who is your moderator,
yeah.
they're able to say like, okay, no. Like, and then with Melissa, she'll be like, hold on. Let's go back to that other thing.
Right.
Cause like there's something there and we just glossed right over it.
Yeah.
So
a lot of what I have learned in couples therapy are the things that are mine mm-hmm. that I arrived to the relationship with, and the things that are, you know, are his,
yes.
he arrived to the relationship
right.
with. So like sometimes we're having a conflict, but a lot of it is about like old stuff that has
yes.
nothing to do with him.
I feel like Al might have told me this quote, but it's like when you're fighting with your partner, you're not fighting with them. You're fighting with
their child version,
the childhood version of themselves.
Yeah. I think that's so much of therapy is that
yes.
it's so much of interpersonal conflict
yes.
is that
yes.
it is.
This is how I saw my parents fight or not fight. This is how I saw my parents not communicate at all, or a million things. So it's like, we're fighting and it's like this much. And then all of it down here, I guess I'm doing like the tip of the iceberg, and everything below the surface is like all of the unique experiences I had prior to coming together with you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's that, like, the discovery, the shining the light, it's all the things that make individual therapy good. You know, I think there's this in our culture, there's this idea because of movies and television shows and things and celebrity that, like, we think this particular thing about relationships, like, they're supposed to be easy and everyone's supposed to be sexy all the time and we're always in love and we're always in like, and it's all easy.
Always in lust.
And if it's not easy, something's wrong and we got to fix it. And it's like, no, it takes a lot of work.
It's people putting their lives completely together. Correct. That is incredibly complicated.
And there's no like realm where you can't fix everything about your, you can't like solve everything about your life before you come into a relationship.
Yes.
That's not realistic. So it's like, I'm continuing to heal. Mm-hmm. He's continuing to heal. We do some of our healing together. Yeah. We do a lot of it apart.
Yeah.
And
sometimes
you
don't do any healing at all for a little while. And that's also okay.
So just, that's the other thing is like, when you go to therapy, what the messages that I've received in good therapy are, these are things happening to almost every other human being. And that to me is like, if you learn nothing else, that is the key, that you are not alone. Yep. You are not the only person this has ever happened to. Yes. As horrible as you feel, as shamed as you feel, there are other people that have gone through this and come out the other side.
That's kind of the whole point of this show, is that exact summary. And also to really bring it back to like the true beginning of this episode, when I said that I started in therapy because I believed that I was broken. I realized that like these things that I thought were flaws are things that a lot of people deal with, that may be heightened in me. We talked about the anxiety and the nervousness and the sensitivity. And now I realize that like they're not bad things, and it can be a superpower, and it can at least be something that you can handle. And I did not need to change myself. I went into therapy with the dream that I was going to change myself and that I was going to be fixed and cured and perfect. And I actually didn't change any of those things that I didn't like about myself, the sensitivity and the anxiety. But I have found ways to embrace it and accept it and live my life with and around it and all of that. And so it is interesting to look at it with like my intentions in starting therapy and then actually where I ended up. Like, I probably would have been kind of pissed, and I'm like, you're telling me I still have anxiety after all this time?
I'm still Ellen.
I'm still myself. And I'm actually really grateful for that.
Me too. I used to think anxiety, nervousness, sensitivity, like deep feeling were things to be kind of solved.
Yes.
And now, you know, one of the greatest things Melissa ever said to me was, you're as sensitive as you are. And I just think about that all the time because, you know, one thing that you do that I've done a lot, and maybe you have, I think you probably have too, and a lot of people do this, is like you have these reactions or emotions or these things about yourself, and you're feeling badly about the way that you've reacted. You've reacted and then you feel bad about it. And then you know, it's like this double whammy all the time.
They talk about this in sex talks.
Yeah.
You're feeling your feelings and then you're feeling bad about feeling your feelings.
Right.
So it's like you have this really fun, like, feelings sandwich where like it's bad enough to feel the original icky feelings. Yeah. And now you are also like beating yourself up over it.
Right.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if there was like one thing to cap my part of this off with, I would say right now I'm in like, you know, the beginning part, I'm getting close to the middle part of my 40s. I am liking myself and settling into myself more than I ever have before. And I know that's because of therapy.
Yeah.
Because I had so many beliefs about myself that just weren't true. And so now, like, the more I embrace who I am and being as sensitive as I am and just allowing me to be who I was born to be, I've always been this person.
Yeah.
Feels good, and it feels like better and better.
I love that. And it gives me hope too, because I do feel so much more at peace with myself and who I am. And then I still have these big pointy moments where mm-hmm. I'm like, oh shit, I'm the worst.
Yeah. Those continue.
You've been privy to a lot of those, but yeah,
those continue.
Yeah.
But you get more tools and you get better at like riding the wave.
Yeah. If we do not ride the wave of change, we will surely find ourselves beneath it, which is like a cheesy frame thing my mom had on her desk like my whole childhood.
Love it.
I have one more thing that I think we should talk about, just because this is, for better or for worse, kind of a sports podcast right now,
obviously,
and that is sports psychology.
Yes.
So this is maybe where I lose a small fraction of my professionalism. Okay. And I say truly in my own personal opinion, it is my podcast after all, that I'm not a huge fan of sports psych. However,
yes,
I love if it is like the way that you get into therapy. Love it.
Yeah.
If it's like,
it's your gateway drug.
It's your gateway drug into like full blown talk therapy or any sort of other modality. Love that. But I think like the reason that I struggle with it is I see these people not that different from me, who really just need straight up therapy, that are like, everything in my life is a mess. I'm having such a hard time with these daily factors, blah, blah, blah. I think I need to see a sports psychologist because I have startling anxiety.
I think it feels like an easier pill to swallow.
It is. It absolutely is. So like, I want to recognize that. And the reason I'm saying this is I started this whole journey in sports psychology.
Yeah.
That was the first therapist that I worked with was sports psych, and there were benefits. I gained a lot from that experience, but it felt like limited. Like there right. was a ceiling to it where it like, I just think that sports psych doesn't go as deep as some people need.
Well, so, and it's sort of suggesting that your startline anxiety only has something to do with like the your sport.
Right. Whereas some people are like super well adjusted and they exist. I haven't met them, but I'm sure that person exists mm-hmm. somewhere. So they don't need CBT or talk therapy or anything like not need. See, I said it, even me, mm-hmm. It's still so deeply ingrained, but they may not benefit from it as much or whatever. That maybe it's not a top priority for them.
Yeah.
So like a little bit of like mind gym, a little bit of these sports psych sessions can really help, because like mm-hmm. absolutely our mind gets in the way in sport.
Yes.
I just think like if that's as far as you go, there is so much left untouched. And so yes, I had startling anxiety. I was self-sabotaging my sport and my performance and blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. However,
keep digging
because it was like, yes, I was doing these things, but also like,
yes, and
mm-hmm. And so I just like, I have people reach out to me a lot. Hey, do you have a sports psychologist that you work with?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, actually I don't. When I started doing the real, like super icky work, the uncomfortable stuff, the stuff that I had really neatly and tightly folded and put at the very back of my closet.
Yeah.
That's when I was actually like, well, that's when I came out of retirement.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I started to think about this, because I was like, oh wait, I already lived through all my biggest fears.
Right. They all happened.
They all happened. Mm-hmm. And I got to like process that. And then sport started to feel like an escape and something I got to enjoy and a release and all of that, rather than feeling like it was this way that I was like punishing myself and proving myself and all that. And so my sports anxiety went away a lot mm-hmm. when the other parts started to heal.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe it was a little bit of, it might've been a little clickbaity to say that I don't like sports psych. That's not true. I just don't.
Well, you needed more personally.
I needed more.
Yeah.
And not everyone does, but I think if you are thinking about like getting into therapy,
yeah.
And you feel like you might need more,
there's more.
There is more, and that's yeah. okay. And if you're also like, no, like really specifically for me, it all centers around sport, like that's fantastic. And there's a whole
yeah.
branch of therapy there, but it's not the end all be all.
Yeah. And I would venture to say it's sports psychology is probably like every other form of psychology, like we've been talking about. There's probably really good ones.
Yes.
And there's probably really unskilled ones.
Yes.
And I would hope that a really skilled sports psychologist would be recommending more therapy. Like, you know, I think we've come to, you know, where we can get to together yeah. in this situation. And like, maybe you'd be interested in, you know, going a little further.
Yeah.
And I also think that if sports psychology is the way that, as you said, someone enters
yes.
and starts to like do that discovery, that inward looking as opposed to what's out here that I can fix. Great.
Yes. Yeah. And I do love it for that. Cause I do think it is such a, it's a much more comfortable pill to swallow. It's mm-hmm. like, no. I don't have like trauma or anything.
I have real problems.
I just, you know, like problems. Sometimes get nervous before races and stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
sports stuff.
Yeah. So that's my say on sports psychology. That is my personal opinion on mm-hmm. sports psych. And I guess just to really summarize the whole thing, therapy is hard
mm-hmm.
and it can be uncomfortable.
Yes. Usually when it's working well, it is uncomfortable.
Yes.
Yeah.
It has surprised me in more ways than I could ever count. There are things that I've learned that I'm like, well, that is a core pillar of my belief system now. And I didn't know that that existed 5 minutes ago. I will be having a very normal and comfortable conversation and then suddenly burst into tears mm-hmm. based on one sentence, one question. It's not sunshine and rainbows, but when you get to the other side of whatever trench you're trudging through, it can be a really beautiful thing. It can be a very incredibly self-loving thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who has struggled to find self-love, a lot in my life, even when I don't really like myself, I've always had this one self-love practice of showing up to therapy. So if you are on the fence and thinking that maybe this is something that I deserve, I would highly recommend it in spite of the fact that it is incredibly hard. It can be uncomfortable. It's just, I keep saying it's icky. It can feel really, really icky and still a very worthy endeavor.
I agree with that. I also think we could talk about this for hours and hours.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many little tidbits that could be added. It's a very personal thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, things that have helped me may not help other people.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's uncomfortable, but it's kind of like, I think about yoga and how, you know, when you practice yoga, you do the asanas or the movements on the mat, and then you leave yoga. And the idea is that you are taking those teachings and you're kind of, you've got more equanimity in the rest of your life. You've got more calm, you've got more peace. You can pause in between
yes.
things a little bit better. And I feel that way about therapy. It is giving you better perspective about yourself. It's giving you more tools. It's giving you, like you said, more self-love, more self-acceptance. And it can be a really beautiful thing.
I love the yoga parallel because you can practice yoga for 20 minutes, an hour. You can practice it for days, but however long you practice it for, the benefits and the tools are with you for so much longer than
yeah.
the hour that you're on the mat.
Right.
And it really is the same. For therapy. And like I said, we could talk about this forever. And I think maybe the reason that didn't occur to me until now that this is our first episode together is I feel like this kind of like lays the foundation for all of the other things that we talk about. I feel like our perspectives on those future subjects are because of the...
Yeah. There's a therapy foundation under there.
Years and years and years of therapy that, I mean, I'm trying to think. I started working with Melissa in 2019. Mm-hmm. So I've been with her for 5 years, but I've been in therapy for the better part of 10 years.
Mm-hmm. And I'm probably going on 20.
Yeah. So it's not like...
And that doesn't mean we're just like irreparably damaged.
Speak for yourself, but...
We're just still working on some stuff.
Yeah. And that is... I was like trying to wrap it up, and then I'm like, great point. But, you know, I almost just named this person, and they probably would have been upset. But it's like, well, if your therapist is so good, why aren't you healed yet? And I'm like, I mean, I could, in theory, like, not be in therapy anymore. Like, I feel like I've worked through like the really big things.
Even as you're saying that,
I don't know if I believe it at all. Yeah. I really don't.
Yeah.
What I mean is, like, there are probably times in my life that I could have been not in therapy, but I like it. I enjoy the feeling. Like, it's hard and it makes me feel better. And yeah, there's always, like you said, there's always stuff. There's always something that you're like, man, I have nothing to talk about this week. And that's when you hang up the phone and you're like, oh my God, that was like the best session. I didn't even know what I was going to talk about. And I feel so much lighter.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do sometimes think that I might be irreparably damaged, but in all honesty, it's actually just,
The human condition.
It's just my lore is really extensive, and I'm not done sharing it yet.
Yeah. Love it.
Do you have any closing thoughts, Catherine?
I'm pro therapy. I recommend it. I understand why some people are hesitant. I get it.
Yeah, it's really scary.
I totally understand. It's so much, like, in a lot of ways, it's short-term easier. Let's say that. It's short-term easier to not discover.
Yes.
I will say, I know for sure, it is long-term better.
Yes.
To get in there.
Yep. In whatever way.
In whatever
way. Whether it's in talk therapy or tapping or... I don't even know. There's so many other ways. This isn't a research podcast about the different types of therapy.
This isn't a comprehensive peer-reviewed journal article.
If you feel like you deserve some release... Get it, girl.
Get into it. Love you.
Love you too. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.